Nobody knows exactly how religion evolved, but people think it went something like this. For tens of thousands of years, humans were hunter-gatherers. They lived in forests and savannas in small groups, and they probably had some kind of animistic beliefs. They painted animal spirits on cave walls. They carved bones or small stones into totems. They probably believed the landscape was alive and sacred. And then, in just a few thousand years, everything changed. People built bigger settlements for hundreds and thousands, and the big gods arrived. All-knowing and all-powerful gods who saw everything you did. The mystery is, why? Where did those big gods come from? And for that matter, why are they still here? Psychologist Ara Norenzayan has a theory. He told Raymond Tungekar that any explanation of religion has to answer two major puzzles.
We have minds and brains that are calibrated to live in small groups of relatives and friends and allies, yet we live in a world that is mostly defined by interactions with complete strangers. So that's the first puzzle. The second puzzle that intrigued me was the fact that of all the possible religions that exist in the world, it seems like just a few account for most believers in the world. So I was trying to answer these two puzzles.
Okay, so let's unpack that first part. I mean, you talked about how we transition from small hunter-gatherer societies to larger communities. And traditionally, I would think that the explanation that most people have for that transition is, you know, is agriculture and the domestication of plants and animals. But it would seem that you have a different theory.
That's correct. So that's the prevailing notion. But here is the thing. A few decades ago, there was this discovery in south-central Turkey, very near the Syrian border. It's an archaeological site called Göbekli Tepe. What's really fascinating about this site is that it may give us some answers to this question and may turn this idea on its head. So Göbekli Tepe is about 11,500 years old. So it's thousands of years older than the oldest pyramids or the Stonehenge. It was built by hunter-gatherers that did not have agriculture. Yet it's the world's oldest place for religious worship. It's the world's oldest temple.
And do we know what the prevailing religion of the time was?
We don't really know. It's very sketchy. We see some pillars, stone pillars, that seem to indicate some animal worship and some ritualistic behavior. What's really striking about this site is that it's a pre-agricultural site.
Hmm.
So the archaeologist who excavated this site, Klaus Schmidt, put the question this way. It said, is it possible that the temple came before the city? That's the question that I explored in my book, Big Gods.
What are these big gods that you refer to?
So these are the gods of the world religions that we now live with. These are gods that are powerful, they're omniscient, they can know your mind, they are intervening, they are moralizing, they care about human morality, and they punish and reward human behavior. What's really interesting is that these types of gods are actually quite rare in the ethnographic record. So among foragers, for example, where most of humanity evolved, these types of spirits and gods are extremely rare. So then the question is, how is it that these types of gods became increasingly common? So if we combine Christianity, Islam, Hinduism, Buddhism, that's already the overwhelming majority of believers in the world.
Okay, so why was this transition to big gods, why was it significant?
Because, well, a few things. One is that to the extent that these kinds of beliefs encourage interaction and cooperation among strangers, then that would give us at least a partial explanation for this remarkable expansion of human group size in the last 10 to 12,000 years. So the problem with interaction with strangers, of course, is that why would you cooperate with a complete stranger and how would you trust them? So the default strategy in human psychology is not to trust or interact with strangers, yet we do this all the time. So one possible idea is that to the extent that people believe in these kinds of moralizing gods, then that could give us some explanation for why these groups expanded.
Okay, so big gods essentially led to a sort of revolution in group cooperation that allowed early humans to move from hunter-gatherer societies to larger groups. But why weren't the so-called small gods, the hunter-gatherer gods, why weren't those moralizing gods?
Well, the thing about gods of hunter-gatherer groups is you look at hunter-gatherer lifestyle, you realize that these gods are really not that important. So most interactions in these groups are among either family members, relatives, or reciprocating partners, people you know and interact with every day. So these are transparent societies where there is no problem of cooperation among strangers. So this only is a problem for large-scale groups where interaction with strangers is the norm.
I mean, I guess what I'm wondering, though, is as humans are entering into larger and larger communities facilitated by, you know, the kind of cooperation that big gods allow, I mean, I would think that you can have some bad faith actors undermine that. You can have some people fake faith, for instance, and pretend to be religious in order to gain some kind of unearned advantage. What prevents that from happening?
That's a great question. And you're right that religious hypocrisy, as you're describing, is a big problem for these communities of cooperators. And these societies have developed various ways to cope or deal with this. So one possible solution is to require the faithful to basically walk the walk and not just to talk the talk.
Well, what's an example of that?
A good example of that is sacrifice, right? So self-sacrifice and accepting costly restrictions on human behavior are common and widespread among these pro-social religions with these big gods. And one explanation for that is that, well, if you don't expect or require people to do costly things like accept limitations on property, who you can marry, restrictions on food, and even in some conditions, sacrifice your life and limb for the community. And these are the kinds of signals that will genuinely convince others that they're interacting with a true believer. As a result, cooperation can flourish among these people.
Let's bring this to the present. I mean, do big gods still facilitate that kind of cooperation?
I think they do to some extent, although today's world is a more complex world and there we have created other institutions to encourage large-scale cooperation. So we have lots of secular institutions that basically have taken over from religious sources of cooperation to basically do the same thing. So some societies have climbed the ladder of religion and then kicked it away. A good example is Northern Europe, Scandinavian societies where majorities are not believers, don't have religious beliefs anymore, but they live in highly cooperative societies, and largely because they have created institutions that play that role, that encourage people to cooperate with complete strangers.
Well, for instance, like what kind of institutions are you talking about?
I'm talking about courts, police, credit, trade, markets. So I'm more likely to trust my neighbor if I know that if I had a problem with my neighbor, I could call the police and the police can intervene, for example. So policing institutions are a really important element of large-scale cooperation because in hunter-gatherer societies, there is no police you can call because you don't need police to can call. You can resolve your differences individually. But as societies grow larger, you need some institutions to come and settle disputes. And you have to trust these institutions.
So you're saying then that thousands of years ago, big gods helped humans cooperate. Now you have secular institutions, and the commonality between both is that both keep people honest and truthful because there's an element of surveillance and accountability built in?
Yeah, so I think that secular societies are surprisingly similar, more similar than you think, to the religious societies that they succeeded. Instead of watchful deities, you have watchful institutions, norms that encourage cooperation as long as you're part of the in-group, part of the community. So they're not that different, even though often people think of them as the opposites or clashing, but they are largely serving the same functions.
Well, I have to ask, if you were to compare secular societies with perhaps more religious ones that believed in big gods, I mean, what's more effective in making people cooperate, big gods or secular institutions?
Well, if your definition is something like corruption or rule of law, then clearly secular societies are doing better now. Not all secular societies have a strong rule of law, but many do. So as societies give up on religion, they do so partly because they are developing alternatives to religion. And in modern society, in modern world, that seems to actually work pretty well.
It makes me wonder, I mean, as more and more places around the world strengthen their secular institutions and, you know, establish the rule of law, do you think it's inevitable that someday we won't need big gods or religion?
Possibly. I mean, depends. If you look at Scandinavia, is that's the best case scenario where you see very strong institutions, rule of law, cooperative societies, very high trust levels, and quite a decline of religion. Japan might be an example like that. The big question that I don't have the answer to is the world moving in that direction inevitably, or is this a temporary blip in historical changes? There are other things to consider. For example, as societies secularize, fertility rates decline quite massively. So even though secularization is happening in the world, at the same time, these secularized societies are, if anything, shrinking because of decline in fertility rates, whereas societies that are not secularizing, they're maintaining their religious levels, they are actually expanding because of high fertility rates. So that will factor in into these kinds of calculations about the future of religion, because one very powerful way that religion is transmitted is from parents to children.
That's Aaron Norenzayan. He's a psychology professor at the University of British Columbia. Raymond Tungekar talked with him about his book, Big Gods.